On this episode of Still Loading, David K. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I have an extremely special guest for you. I am so incredibly excited to have him on the podcast. He is only my second ever voice actor on. David K is on the podcast today. You may know him as such roles as Clank from Ratchet and Clank. He's Cringer from the new He-Man Masters of the Universe TV series. I mean, Sesshomaru from Inuyasha. Like, so the voice credit list goes on and on. Megatron from Beast Wars. It just keeps on going. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah, I had my toy. I always had my toy with me. Dad, stop! You're making me sound like I'm still a kid, just, you know, pretending.
That's the best part about it, though. As long as you're having fun, that's the best part about it. But no, thank you so much for coming on, David. This is truly a pleasure to have you on. I'm a huge fan of your work on Ratchet and Clank. It's my favorite game series, so I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast. But first off, how are you doing today?
I'm good, and I know your listeners can't see this, but look what I'm holding up in front of the camera, and there's your favorite character.
Oh yeah, there he is.
I have two versions of Clank on my my studio desk here.
Yeah. I actually met you at RetroCon a year or two ago, and and you signed my copy of Ratchet and Clank.
There it is. Yeah.
Right there.
I signed a few of those. We're at the Game On Expo in Phoenix this past weekend, and I signed a few of those, the early ones. It's the one that I played all the way through. I always keep starting and I never finish them.
And when your time is limited, you don't really, you know, there's only so much you can do.
It's one reason why I don't really golf too much, because I'm like, okay, 9 holes is good. I'm good. You know, but when I get a chance to get the PS5, we're going to get some new AV gear here at the house. And, you know, I want the full on Oculus. I want the experience. My son has a PS5. I don't know how the hell Spencer tried it, but he showed me a few times and brought it over. And I've seen obviously, you know, like we've seen this stuff, clips on and things. It's amazing. It looks amazing. It was amazing working on it. But I should answer the question you asked me at the very beginning, is how am I? I'm good. You know, I mean, I just finished a workout. It hurt like hell, but
you did it right.
You know, the older I get, the harder I push. I'm not sure. I guess that's a good thing, but it's just I mean, I've always been, since I, for years, I've always trained and, you know, worked out like 4 or 5 times, but it became a mission when the pandemic hit, because the one good thing about, there's no good things about it really, but all of us in the industry kept busy because we kept right on rolling. The only thing, the sad part, is we were all at home doing our thing, and that Ratchet and Clank game was finished, in our houses, in our pajamas. And so we kept running, and my saving grace was the fitness routine. I had this routine, even to this day. We're still in the middle of this thing, but I have this routine, and if I don't have my routine, I feel off. I feel like
I gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like it's like I'm kind of the kind of person that can't. I when I fly, I'd rather be flying the airplane. You know what I mean? I'm not a good passenger.
I understand that entirely.
Yeah. And there's nothing you can't control this. You don't know. So I'm like, the only thing I could control is how I felt. Okay. I can control like a train, and I feel like I'm like controlling something. So, but you know, I'm good. And, it's a loaded question these days, but I no complaints, and I'm grateful beyond. So there you
That's
go.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, I can understand.
Long-winded answer to the opening segue. I apologize.
Oh, you don't have to apologize. The more talking you do, the easier it is on me. No, but that's good to hear, and I can understand what you mean. Like, I think with the pandemic, it's important that we all found a silver lining for the, if you could. I understand it wasn't as easy for other people.
No, of course. But that's where comedy comes in. It's like, yes. We got to laugh. You got to laugh at something. Good Lord, you have to laugh at something. So, yeah.
But to dive right into this, I have a bunch of questions for you. I know we do have a time limit, so let's dive right into this. So one of my first questions I was curious about is, how did you first get into acting/VO? Not necessarily how to become a voice actor. I know you get that asked that question a million times. I'm more talking about your personal journey. Was acting something you always wanted to do, or was voiceover something you kind of found your way into?
Yeah, I guess I found my way into it, but I answered this question in a sense over the weekend in Phoenix, and I was always, if you look at the old the videos of me and even gosh, and showing my age, you have some 8mm film and I'm always sort of jumping in front of the camera and making a fool of myself. So I wanted the attention, but I really didn't want the attention. When it comes right down to it, when I was doing some on-camera work when I used to live in Canada, a couple of X-Files and a few of the shows up there, and I really quite enjoyed it. Did some plays, and every time I'd opening night, I'd go, "What the hell am I doing? Why am I? This is painful. This is terrifying." But I enjoyed it. So as much as I liked the attention, I'm not comfortable with it still. I much prefer to be alone.
So would you classify yourself as an introvert then?
Introvert, extrovert sort of thing. I love the cons when I meet people, and it's just such a thrill, because without our pop culture, without the fans showing up, there's no us, there's no career, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So really grateful for that. It's great. But I will go to certain we'll go to conventions, and I will go off on my own. I will I enjoy the company, but I really honestly prefer. So I don't know what the hell I was thinking when I want to go into business, good Lord. But I remember I started dabbling, because I started in radio on the air when I was 17 in my hometown, and I was a DJ, and the old 75 degrees downtown. Hey, it's going to snow tonight. Oh, here's Madonna. I don't know what, whatever. I did country radio for a while. I met Randy Travis before.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. I met Kenny Rogers and Steve Warner. And I met Reba McEntire. She was delightful. I met, all these old country stars. Some of them are not with us. I met Willie Nelson. I met Steve Earle. I had a great time. And I had no idea about country music when I got into it, but I had a hadn't got a clue. And to this day, my sister knows everybody. I'm like completely, I have no idea. But country radio was great for me. I met the Judds, I still do a lot of tours. Part of my voiceover business is being the voice of certain tours called tour support. So when you hear stuff like Five Finger Death Punch in concert, that's that's me.
Oh, I see. Walls,
Brantley Gilbert in concert, and so that became sort of a business on its own, and still grows to this day. I started doing like radio and television station identification and promotion, which is, tonight on ABC Eyewitness News at 11, for radio and for TV and for radio, it's Power 104, all that. and it's still to this day is another part of the business that I do on a daily basis. So radio was the start of sort of the career in Vancouver. It was known as a hotbed for producing cartoons. Mm-hmm. Deek Animation was up there, DIC, which we all, the moniker to us stood for Done in Canada. And it was G.I. Joe. There's a few cartoons I knew that my friends were on that I'd met in the acting community, and had an audition for G.I. Joe for General Hawk, the great American hero. And I ended up booking it somehow.
Did you have any experience prior to that with voiceover?
None. I was on the air doing character work on the air on a morning show. And I just fancied myself, a performer. I have no idea, where that came from, but I loved radio. I loved the microphone. I loved the fact that you could sort of be anybody and create anything behind the mic, and theater of the mind was a big deal for me. And so literally my agent, who was new as an agent, said, "Do you know how to do voices?" And I tell this story a million times, and I said, yes. I hadn't had a clue. And so I went out and I ended up booking the role 6 weeks later. And that began the, you know, the journey. And because I remember being in the studio, the first episode, and yo, Joe, follow me, you know, toward the danger. Come on, gentlemen, you know, let's hop to it. You know, blah, blah, blah. Cobra's not going to wait for anyway. And I thought, okay, I'm done with radio. I want to do that forever because the fun in a booth with everybody. Yeah. Fun, and that's when I first met, you know, Ian Corlett, Gary Chalk, and Scotty McNeil, and all the Vancouver, you know, folks. Terrell Rothery, who I still have a crush on. She's on Virgin River. You know, she's the blonde that we see on season one. But she, I think she's on it. But I met all the, you know, Janice Jode, all the Vancouver, Brian Drummond, and in 2007 I moved to LA because I had been cast in TF animated Transformers. You know, I believe this was post Megatron and Beast Wars, but
yeah.
So my life, I was on an airplane every week for almost 10 years. Not every week, every few weeks.
Wow. Sometimes, like, just traveling to do all the recording sessions?
Vancouver, LA. I'd be down here.
Oh my gosh.
You know, William Morris signed me. I was doing stuff here. And I remember distinctly, I'll wrap up this answer to the question by my very good friend that was doing an acting class. And I, this is back in Vancouver, early days. And we all went around the room and, you know, what do we, you know, what our name was, what do we do? And, you know, what do we want out of this class? And I said, you know, I just want one line in a movie. And Roger, my good friend, Roger Barnes, who's an actor in Canada, said, remember that time in my class, you said, all I want to do is one line in a movie. So that was that's the kind of the story. And that's where it all began. I cut my teeth in Vancouver, you know, in that scene there. And again, as I said at the top, I'm just grateful to inhabit any of these characters. And the fact that they hire me is still a miracle to me. It's like they want me. Okay.
How much of it is auditioning still now that you've been in the industry for as long as you have? Is there still a lot of auditioning that you do, or it more offers?
There are offers that come in, which is nice. Sometimes that they that tends to happen more, I think, stateside, more here, where the business is a little bit different. And that tends to come in. There are, you know, they know your body of work and they say, hey, listen, they want to, that happens. But for the most part, all of us audition, even, you know, even the celebrities, even the ones that are on camera and the big stars will still audition, you know. My publicist, Michelle, who you've probably been in contact with, has been, you know, at me, do you think you want to get in front of the camera again? I think she's pushing me. But I think I would like to, because this part, I remember back in the day, I was like, it was just, oh, I got to learn, you know, I was okay. I could hit my marks and know where my light is, but I hated seeing myself on screen. I'd look at myself, geez. But I loved behind the mic. I just loved the nuance, and I'm still learning stuff every day. But I think I'm in a good place now where I'm comfortable with who I am, and I really don't care. And I know that I could bring something to a role. As before, I'm like, no, I didn't have the experience.
That's got to be freeing in a sense, because rid of that inhibition that you're like, you're so nervous. Yeah. It took me years just to get used to my own voice on this podcast. And now I used to hate the sound of my own voice, and now I don't. And now I can picture, like with you, like you didn't like seeing yourself, and you still may not enjoy it. It's one of those weird things that uncanny valley isn't the right term for it, but it kind of like, it gives you that uncomfortable feeling like the uncanny valley does, because you're critiquing yourself harsher than other people will critique you, most likely.
And it's a horrible place to be, especially when you're doing theater, because all of a sudden a spotlight goes on and you find yourself looking at yourself, watching yourself on, and you know, that's a horrible place to be. And that happened a few times, but it is freeing, because I think it's just being on the planet longer, you know, where you just get used to it. It's like, really, they say, love yourself. And you know, it sounds corny, but damn it, man. I mean, that really is what it comes down to, is you are who you are. And people ask me about the voice. So I said, look, man, you got to figure out who you are first. Travel, read as much as you can. You know, be curious. US is a great country, but there's a whole other world out there. The more you have that perspective, the more you have that reference point, when you're asked to do a character in a film or a movie or a cartoon, you have its nuance. You have experience. You know, so what we do when we're 18 and in our 20s is completely different how we, you know, are in our 40s and 50s or so, because we have a reference point.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's a bit of advice there. I slid in.
I agree 100% with you with the, it's cliche and cheesy to say, you know, love yourself, but this is going to sound dirty, but I'm a firm believer in self romance. And I don't mean in the dirty sense. I mean, take yourself out on, like, go to Venice and take yourself on a nice gondola ride. You don't need to go with anyone. Romance yourself. No. You got to learn to love yourself first.
Be comfortable by, you know, with being with yourself. It is so, and we all know someone, and you know, somebody listening may be uncomfortable being in it. They need people around. No, you don't. When you go, for example, I went to a con a while ago in Washington, D.C., many years ago. I said, now I got to go see, because this is before I became a U.S. citizen. I said, I got to go to the cemetery, the famous, you know, where all the
Arlington,
Arlington National. I'm thinking, I'm by myself. I got on the tour bus, and the tourists were driving me nuts and nattering away. And like, and I got off by myself, and I walked through and saw the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And I went to the Lincoln Memorial, and I read the words, and went, wow, you know, this is, and being by myself and sort of taking that all in, it meant something. It's just, I think there's a lot of noise around these days. And I think to be comfortable with, you know, being yourself, and it's going to a museum or standing and looking at the Mona Lisa, you know, yeah, it's a postage stamp, but you're like in front of history. You're like by yourself thinking, like, it's wonderful. And I know
really
I'm
cool. You
know, kind of esoteric, but it all comes back to experience. It just experience in the world, so you can throw this crap into your character or your read. And it honestly means something. It's not just reading words on a page. It's
you're making 100%. I'm understanding you entirely. There's I think oversimplifying what I'm about to say is, when you're doing voiceover work, you're not doing voices. I know it's talked about by a lot of other voice actors at conventions and stuff. The primary word in voice actor is actor. You have to understand how to be able to get into a character, and you learn more how to do that, like you were saying, through world experiences. You can't just stay in your own little bubble, and you have to kind of get out. Now, I was thinking just kind of what you're talking about. I've been obsessed with this other podcast, and I'm going to mention it later on, but right now they're talking a lot about empathy and how people use empathy to communicate to each other. Yeah. Do you incorporate empathy into your roles? Like, do you try to empathize with your characters or the characters you're interacting with in order to kind of better play off them?
That's a great question. Empathy, if you're going to be an actor, if you're going to be an actor and do this profession, I call it being a person, really. But if you're going to be an actor, you have to have empathy. I don't understand the other side, those who don't have empathy and don't care about others, and it's all me, and the world revolves around me, and screw you. And I can't imagine not having empathy, because, for example, I feel everything, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the curse. It's sort of the actor's curse. We feel everything, and which is difficult. I go on online and scroll, doom scroll, and I go, it may not have anything to do with me, but I kind of feel it. I feel the empathy for people and for disenfranchised and folks who are having a tough time, you know. And so we're putting into a character. Here's the fun part, is doing a character that has no empathy. So you need to be able to play that. You need to be able to go down the dark
almost
road.
A selfish path, like just ignoring others.
Yeah. So like, you know, Megatron, very Shakespearean, and, you know, Beast Wars, he has that hero complex. Mm-hmm. We see him as, what is he doing? He's this evil kid. No, to him, it's a hero complex. You know, this is the way he believes things should be.
Yeah.
If I do, will happen. Ah, Commander Rattrap, what a pleasant surprise. It shall avail you not. No, side guns. And that's his answer, because he's doing the right. It's a hero complex. So you need to be able to, you know, play around in that. And for Clank, I want to make you cry. He's a robot. He's not human, but he has a soul. There's a soul in there. There's something wonderful about him. And my, in the movie and things, I'm, you know, when you say things like, but Ratchet, you are my friend, you know, you go, oh, you know, I want people to feel.
There's a sincerity that to that, which you wouldn't expect out of a robot, but it's
And so it's wonderful to play. So you have to have empathy, but you also have to be able to turn it off, you know, and play the character. And it's from truth. No matter what I do, Sesshomaru is, you know, very, he comes from, he's a demon. He's ethereal and wonderful. And he speaks easy. And what he says doesn't say a lot, but what he, when he does say it, it lands. You know, all these characters have to have a heart and a soul. They have to live and breathe. They have to laugh and cry. But I think most importantly, they have to have a soul. Even when you're doing a cartoony character,
you know, when you're up in here like this doing a cartoon, hello, hello. It's gotta be, you know, it's gotta have to be, you know, empathetic and feel things. You have to be able to cry and laugh.
It's all that with the He-Man thing. Who's the character Liam on the Game of Thrones? He was the king's right hand man, the Red Queen. Remember the Red, the witch?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a good idea, sir. I think it shouldn't be. And that, I based him on kind of between Liam Neeson and that Liam from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Very fatherly figure. That's why we had come up with this character. You know, this is not, we have to be careful. You know, this is, he's a protector. And that's where I wanted to play him. So it's hard to know where they all come from, really. Sometimes I don't know. I open my mouth and hope something comes out. And, but it is, you have to, as an actor, you have to have empathy. You have to understand what that is, and you have to feel, and that can be a curse. Really?
That's so true. There's, I'll just to tell you what the podcast that I'm talking about is, because listeners know I've mentioned it actually on the past two interviews that I've done, which by the time this comes out will have since been released on the show. Mm-hmm. There's a podcast that Alan Alda does called Clear and Vivid.
Oh,
yeah. If you ever get a chance to listen to it, David, I think you would love it. It's all about how we communicate to each other.
Yes, right.
He has a whole like institute that studies communication, and it teaches scientists improv so that way they can be better communicators to relay all the complex topics and whatnot. Yeah. But one of the things that one of his guests was talking about was how too much empathy can be a problem. Like if you go to see a therapist and you break down and cry because you break down and cry to the therapist. You don't want the therapist to be that empathetic when they start breaking down.
No, you have to have somebody. That's what I meant. Yeah, you remember poor Heath Ledger, you know, when he went and did the Joker role, it was like we all watched and went, oh my God, how, what? You know, you go so deep. Some actors go so incredibly deep that it's hard to get back out. You need to have somebody. You need to have somebody. My main agent is retiring. Jeff is great. He says, you know, do you have a therapist? And I go, well, no, you know, it's just, it should be part of your job. It's part of your, you know, you go to the gym, you go this, you should have somebody you can talk to. And he's right. Just somebody, not to be a therapist, somebody you can kind of, who's kind of a even keel. My wife is like that. She's like, you know, she's, thank God for her. Cause I'm, you know, I can go down the empathy road too far and snap out of it. But it's just the way, I guess it's the way we're built, you know, the way we're all kind of built. And I know a lot of actors feel the same way. They, you know, if something in the news is horrible, like, you know, hey, man, how you doing? You know, and I don't really want to do that because I'm trying to keep positive. But we all need someone that's even keel. And we all need that therapist in our lives.
Yeah, it's
very true.
Yeah.
Listen to us talking voices. We're talking therapy.
I like this type of conversation though. I like to, I'm sure you like these types of questions. One, you can't really ask these at a convention because the forum doesn't really.
Yeah, you're right.
That medium would not represent this type of conversation. But two, it's more fun to me because these are the types of things I like to get to understand the actors a little bit more than just like, oh, so how did you, what was it like? Because I think one of the strangest questions to ask anyone in a creative medium is, what was it like to do this? And it's like, well, I just did it.
I just did it, yeah. But like, you're right, because you know, behind it all are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us are... we're uncomfortable. And my manager always laughs at me and says, you know, I got to rethink this whole thing. We know we're coming out to New York and we do like a mixer and we meet all the, you know, because you guys is, you know, you're so, you just like to be behind your microphone. You don't like to come out. So I have to rethink this whole thing about inviting you to all these mixers, because I get there, I'm like, yeah, I got to go. yeah, I can't breathe. I gotta go. Yeah, just we're all human beings. And I think some of us, you know, I guess I'm a sensitive sort. I'm one of those people that wishes we could all get along. I know the reality is that I guess we can't. And as said very poignantly in the movie Mars Attacks, when Jack Nicholson confronts the aliens, says, can't we all just get along? You know, and you're like, oh, maybe no. You know, Frank Welker does a thing and then he zaps him. I go, no, yeah, there's the answer right there. Guess we can't.
Not all the time, unfortunately. I was going to ask, you're talking about how some actors go down pretty far down that rabbit hole. Has there been any roles that you've had that you've done that maybe hopefully if it's something that went too far, you don't have to revisit it. But is there any roles that you've done that have gone pretty far down a rabbit hole that you weren't expecting to and it was hard to come back out?
Yeah. This is a long time ago when I didn't have a lot of experience, but I did do Stanley Kowalski's Streetcar Named Desire on stage.
Oh, okay.
A great mentor and very good friend who helped me get to sort of, and I had a great an acting a professor, actually, who was a friend of ours, a mutual friend, and he never taught me, but I did take a voice class from him. This is like Shakespearean voice, not mm-hmm. like a voice. And he came up to me one night and after a performance, it was very good English accent, just wonderful. Neil Freeman, you can actually buy his text. He redid the Shakespeare folio. And it's Neil Freeman.
Okay.
Penguin Books. It's still out there. And Neil was just an intelligent, wonderful, wonderful human being. But it's very, very, very well done. But listen to me. Some advice. So don't be afraid to be ugly. I go, what? No. Don't be afraid to be ugly. I go, oh, thanks, Neil. Circles within circles, dear boy. Circles within circles, he used to say. And I never really kind of went over my head. I go, oh, thank you. Cool. And it wasn't until later, as I get older, and said, don't be afraid to be ugly. And I went, oh, one day, oh, shit. Don't be afraid to go down that road to be human. Don't be afraid to you don't need to comb your hair and be coiffed. And Stanley Kowalski was a brute. He was a
it's been a while since I read that play, but he beat Stella, right? That was like,
yeah, he's and that's what he meant. Don't be afraid to go, you know, don't be afraid to go down that road. Because, and I went, oh my god, yeah, wow. I mean, I don't know if I'd ever do it again, but now that I understood, I go, yeah, you need to be able to go down that road. And I remember in rehearsal, it was it was an animal exercise. I started kind of walking, you know, mm-hmm. there's an attitude, and there's a swagger, and you know, I don't know what I did, but it does kind of affect you. And I remember the closing night, it all went away. It's like you take off and it's gone. I couldn't even remember the day after.
You could just shed the character from you,
like gone. But I remember during it, you're like, there's certain things that you find yourself, you know, so, and that's real, an amateur. I couldn't imagine, you know, some of the ones that go down all the way and, you know, have a hard time getting back out again. It's just, it's a mental mind F, you know what I mean?
I believe it. To kind of take a pretty hard left turn. We've been talking about a lot of more like, dealing, you know, the emotional side of acting and how you get into characters and everything. I want to take a hard left turn to auditioning, and specifically, what do you remember about your audition for Clank and how that went? I know first game came out in 2002, but you've been with the role since then. So what do you remember from the early stages of getting that role?
Well, I remember I was still living in Canada, still living in Vancouver and commuting. Mm-hmm. I was starting to commute a lot at that time, back and forth to LA, and I remember in my home studio I received a fax.
Remember those fax?
Hey, at my job we actually still use them, believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, there you go, still there. And it was some cartoons and some shows and some commercials are, you know, they have a description, a character, who it is, male, female, or certain ages, style of voice, whatever. And they have about the character, relationships with other characters. I mean, some go on and on. And the Clank one came through. It was literally a quarter of a page description. And I remember reading about it. Okay, he's a robot, but we don't want him to sound robotic. We want him to have a personality. So it's kind of riding that razor's edge, and I'm looking at it. And there's a bit of dialogue. That was it. No picture, no nothing. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I started sort of talking, and it was written, like, for example, they would write the word can't, and I decided, well, maybe I'll say cannot, because a robot might not
use a contraction or something like
contraction.
That.
Yeah. So I,
well, of course, I cannot imagine Ratchet, you know, and I, my head started doing this sort of bobbing and weaving. And to this day, I also mentioned this in Phoenix, that I think the reason I have, sometimes your neck gets kind of a little out, I think pretty much I can blame that on Clank, because for whatever reason, I have to do this with my head, because I guess it emulates sort of a robotic type thing, but he still has a soul, you know? So that's what I did. I didn't use contractions. I did a couple of takes, and I forgot all about it and didn't even know. And I remember the session, the first few sessions for that game were at Warner Brothers Studios, and like, I'm in LA, I'm like, I'm going through the gate, and there's the tower. Ah, there's Rob Bolton right up there. There's Jess Harnell, and they're all, and I was thrilled to be, you know, I'm walking
you
down
do the
and,
tour
know,
for that.
I belong here. I'm on the Warner Brothers lot, you know. And now, of course, it's social media. Everybody's got to do the obligatory, hey, look where I am today, you know, and get me on the with the tower. It's like, oh, okay. but that's how it went. And I would never have thought, no one thinks that, oh, this cartoon's going to last forever. You're talking about this, you know, till after I'm dead, they're still going to be talking. But you don't know. In some episodes and cartoon things, you think, well, this is going to go on forever, but it lasts like half a season. You just don't know. So the fact that we're still talking about Clank, and we're still, I would imagine, and look, no one's told me anything. I would imagine they're probably still working on something. They got something in the works, you know, because the franchise has been great, hugely successful. And why would they stop? So it were, you know, it's still going, and a lot of people still haven't played the game yet, and so still going through that.
But it's just such a wonderful character, you know, he riding the razor's edge, as it were.
that's how that audition went, and I think I got, you know, it was maybe a couple of weeks after.
Hey, DK, so good news, they want to hire you for the role of Clank, and I go, who? What? And they go, oh yeah,
and I couldn't remember what I did, and they played it back, and I go, no, and that's where it all started.
That's crazy. Are there any roles that you've taken where you knew from the get-go it was going to be popular? Like, from, like, maybe it was like a new show or something, you just knew.
Transformers, I knew. Transformers, we all knew, because that was when Mainframe was doing the thing. And I remember one day when Sue Blue was up directing, and we all, we'd been doing the season. We're into the second season, and
hey guys, good news, we're gonna have to take a look at a bit of the cartoon today. And so we all sat in the old Pinewood Studios, which is all torn down now and gone.
Yeah.
And showed us some renderings of the first sort of episode. And I remember them bringing a camera in to record us all on camera. And I did my thing with my hand. Yeah. Oh yes, of course. Yes. And the my little hand kind of went up and did this little thing with two fingers, like the dinosaur, like a T-Rex. And hell, it made the cut. So these little nuanced things we do as human beings, kind of they animated into the characters. And at the time, we all thought, wow, it's the future. And now we look back at that, and we're like, that's so old. That might as well be a 78 record on a turntable. But it was ahead of its time, and we thought, oh no, this is going to be something. And I didn't realize there was like a Transformers before. I grew up on Bugs Bunny. And all the, you know, the Tex Avery and all the wacky weird cartoons.
I
was all my jam, Popeye and the Flintstones and the Jetsons and that. And there was a weird old cartoon when I grew up in across the border from New York. I used to get Buffalo Television, and there was this cartoon, The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz is a funny, funny place where everyone wears a funny, funny face. All the streets are paved with gold, and no one ever grows old. And a funny line all the way. And
Rusty, right? That was the Tin Man was like, "Hey, I'm Rusty. Hey, what da da da?" You know, and the voices. And I used to watch that hilarious House of Frightenstein, which is a Canadian thing, which is still so freaking classic. Look that up on.
I will look that up. Okay.
Hilarious House of Frightenstein, And I grew up on that stuff. So I had no idea about Transformers or any of it all. And I looked at this and went, this is going to be something. This might be big. And then my first convention, I went to Rochester with Venus Terzo, like Black Arachnia. And there were, you know, thousands of people there. And I went, what? You know, and they were all there to see us. And I had no idea. Somebody in the back of the room, our first panel, like Peter Cullen was there at that time as well when they first started. From G1.
Mm-hmm.
This hadn't been done yet, obviously. But somebody in the back goes, hey, Mr. K, can you say excellent? And I think I said, you know, excellent, yes. And the whole place erupted like a rock concert. I feel very powerful.
I can control all of them. I can
control all of them with my voice. And I went, oh, so this is a BotCon. This is, oh. And I'm actually going to be in BotCon in Nashville the end of this month.
Oh. August 25th.
Whenever this podcast is on, August 25th, I may have already been and done it, but I've never been to Nashville. And BotCon
this
is
back.
This
will be out 3 days after. It'll be out August 28th.
So you'll hear this, and I will be home on the 28th. So this will have happened. But that's crazy.
That's nuts. My old boss is a huge Transformers fan. That's the only reason because I didn't watch Transformers. I did watch a little bit of Beast Wars, but he goes to BotCon almost every year. So you may unknowingly see him there if there's, you know, tons of people. There's going to be tons of people there, but yeah. So another complete non sequitur left turn I just want to make sure I hit some of my favorite questions that I have written down here. One of the things I'm most amazed about with voice actors is that you're seldom in the same recording session at the same time. You almost always record solo. And then I'm not an actor, but I can't imagine having to act off nobody. Do you how exactly is that difficult to do, to act opposite of someone that you don't even get to see their reactions in live time?
Well, that's your imagination comes in that. But look, I much prefer to be in the same room. That's why this last 2.5 years has been a real pain in the ass. Because
I believe it.
I love being in the room with others because it just, there's a different energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like doing a radio play. You're all in there together. You're goofing around. And you know, when it comes down to it, you're doing some serious business and you're on the clock. But that is a skill that needed to be adapted for the rolling through the pandemic. Is you need to see it in your head. It's much like Beethoven or Mozart or the old, you know, composers from, you know, hundreds of years ago. They saw, and even in course today's composers and artists, they saw it all. They close their eyes or they heard it, saw it all in their head. It's all, they literally see the notes, and they can see the people. Like, you know, when you think of it, when I say the word symphony, you know, other people are going to get different. I close my eyes and I can see it all. I can see the conductor. I can see the string. So when you have a scene and there's some serious, say you have to cry. I did a recent show that I cannot mention at all, but it's wonderful writing. And there's a very heavy moment in it, and you have to go there. And they're on Zoom watching you on the camera here.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, close your eyes and you have to get there. And that's the skill. That's the imagination. That's the feeling. You need to feel, mm-hmm. you know, and see it. That's just one of those things where you need to do, or you need to go there, and it needs to sound as real as you possibly can. And some people use other ways to get there, personal experience, whatever. But there's an old, what was it, Dustin Hoffman and John Gielgud or something, they're working together on an old movie. And I think it was Hoffman that, you know, would stay up all night and starve himself, and they had to shoot in the morning. He'd be like exhausted and tired and to get into the role.
Yeah.
That's how he did it. But then Gielgud would say, dear boy, it's called acting, you know.
Very British mentality of that. There's, yeah. I love, there's a story I heard. One of the many podcasts I listened to, Greg Proops was on one, and he was talking about how he went to see Madea, not like the Tyler Perry Madea, but the play. And oh my gosh, who's the actress? It's going to, she played James Bond's wife in The Only Time He Got Married, on Her Majesty's Secret Service. She was on the Avengers TV show from the 60s. She was in Game of Thrones recently. Diana Rigg.
Diana Rigg.
She played
Emma Peel.
He saw her in Madea.
I had a huge crush on her, by the way.
Oh, I don't blame you. She was But he was telling a story about how he saw her in that play. And in the final scene, you know, she's like covered in blood and the set's crashing down around her and just giant pieces slamming. And then they leave the theater and then she's just walking like nothing had happened. Completely it was just 20 minutes before she was just covered in blood with stuff slamming down around. And she's like, it's just acting. Just switch it off. That's crazy. Yeah. That's nuts to me.
Yeah.
I asked before about your Clank audition, but I wanted to know, do you have any funny audition stories in general from any of your roles, any that you're willing to share?
I can't remember them specifics. Everyone has their nemesis.
Who knows?
Studio that won't hire them, or they just can't get a break. And I remember going to Disney multiple times for callbacks, and every time I would be the initial audition would be solid.
Mm-hmm.
And you get on the lot and you're walking through and you're on Disney. You're the historic Disney lot, and you look up and there, you know, we used to go to the Warner or the Disney lot over here in Burbank, and there's these the big stone carvings of the dwarves way up. You know, like the gargoyles, but they're all dwarves.
Yeah, yeah.
They stare at you, and they look at you, and you better be good. You better be good. And you get all kind of, okay, it's just Disney. Don't worry about it. You got this, you know. And I go in and completely blow it. At least I thought I probably did okay, but I just it wasn't where I wanted to be. And there are other times, like I used to drive by Nickelodeon, you know, on my way to Cartoon Network. And I used to look over one day you're gonna hire me one day, and you know it can't get arrested. Certainly we all have our own thing, because I would sabotage. I'd work myself up and I go, okay, call back at Nickelodeon, here we go, all right this is the one. I go, I'm ready for this, park the car, hello, how are you, good to see you, yep, I'll just be in about the day that out. And then sure, I'd go in. And even though I would, I thought I did okay, I said, it's not going to happen, is it? And I'd leave, and I go, well, see you next time, Joe. You know, so it's a lot of self-sabotage. You get sort of worked up. And I think now I just don't care. I'll bring who I bring, and I'm in there, and I'll do it. And if it's in the cards, it's in the cards. Sometimes you feel it. Sometimes you think, you know, we'll do an audition. I'll do stuff from home. And I'm thinking, nah, come on. This is going to, you know, I'll just stand by and wait for the booking, you know, and you send your thing, you feel confident. And of course you don't get it, but I just do it and move on now, because I've learned my lesson many times over. It's just a matter of growth in the industry. You know that every day is not going to be your day, and some days are, and that's the way it is. I enjoy auditioning. I think it's fun. And it gives me a chance to practice and to see where I can go with it. And sometimes, you know, they want you and they call, which is fantastic. And sometimes they call a lot, and sometimes it's phenomenal. It's been an amazing ride, and still continues to be an amazing ride. I will never retire, because why? I don't think I've ever really started.
You don't need to. It's voice work.
You know, come on. Yeah.
Have you been able to get work at Disney and Nickelodeon since this story occurred?
I don't know. Yeah, Disney, of course. I mean, you know, I made the MCU. Arisham, and I thought, okay, I've arrived. You know, no, I didn't say that. I'm thinking I'm just grateful and amazed. And in Avengers Assemble, a lot of them are on Disney Plus and Disney Network, and I do trailers a lot for D Plus and for Disney. So, and I had a chance to play Duckworth in DuckTales, such a thrill. Duckworth, the corporeal world. Not right now, you know. He was fun, the butler. And, you know, I got a chance to play in around with the new Green Eggs and Ham, the Dr. Seuss series.
Yes, that's a newer show that's been out. Yeah. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it was such a thrill because I grew up on all that stuff, and
I love those Dr. Seuss cartoons.
it was a thrill to do that. I can't Nickelodeon. I've done a few things like promos, and I can't. Maybe there's something that's sort of a crossover thing. I believe I have the video game. There's a video game that's out, and I play a powdered toast man as a. But yeah, it's just, is there certain things you just, well, I've resigned. I quit. But it's just the way it is. It's just the business. And the Netflix, my first primetime comedy on Netflix is out there with Farzar. It's out there and it's so much fun, a lot of laughs, and it's a dream come true. So in the big scheme of things, they say, well, what's the career arc? It's who's David Kaye? Get me David Kaye. Get me somebody who sounds like David Kaye. Who's David Kaye? It's that arc. So I'm still in who's David Kaye, and but there's a few times now where I get me David Kaye. So I'm still, you know what I mean?
You're
I'm still there.
in that transition period between the being
Between
asked for
I'm
constantly.
still, yeah, but I'm still who's David Kaye. And then there's some give me David K's, but I'm still there. I'm still growing. There's still growth. So I'm thrilled. So it's all good.
Are there any characters that you've done where you find yourself doing the voice of it outside of the recording session, like constantly? Like something that you just love doing the voice so much you can't stop doing it, maybe to the nuisance of your wife.
Oh, I talked to my dog in a goofy voice. I've been doing that voice ad nauseum. I've never done it in a cartoon, but it's I do this weird little, and it's like I must sound just totally like an idiot. And I've been doing that voice. It's never made a cartoon, but otherwise, other than that, I lead a pretty normal everyday existence. I will do crazy voices. I know when I tend, like last night I had a meeting, and I'm running a this is random. I run a gourmet society here in LA,
Oh, okay.
and I'm into food and wine, and I really enjoy it. It's something completely off.
No, that's cool.
My parents wonder who the hell I am some days. But anyway, yeah, just I love it, and it's really well, I love chefs, and I love helping young chefs, and I love wine because it's geography, topography, and history, and something about it. It's a romantic thing too. But when I was out last night with a few people after dinner, after a board meeting, and I would, every time I would mimic someone's voice, I would do their voice. And the guy who was a wine rep last night said, "Do you realize that you just kind of rattled off like four or five voices of people like in 2 minutes?" I go, "Oh God, yeah, I'm sorry." He's, "No, that's funny. But when you mention salsa, you do their voice." I will tend to do that in conversation without really realizing it. I will talk in their voice. That's something I do that is kind of strange, but
That's funny. It's not strange. It's you. There's nothing wrong with that.
yeah.
Now we're getting close to the time, so I have a couple more questions for you. One, I actually wanted to ask quickly just about cooking then. Like what is one, since it's something you said you enjoy doing, you like cooking and wine, what's one of your favorite meals to cook? Like when you're, maybe it's like
What?
a stress reliever, like what calms you down if you're having a busy day? What meal do you like to prep for yourself?
I like to make toast. Buttered
My
toast.
wife is Sicilian, so in her sauce is, I've never, even in Italy, I'm like, and it's still not as good as yours. So she's I'm not I'm more like the I will pair, like she will cook. My favorite French thing to do is a winter dish called a cassoulet, and it's a hearty dish, and it just conjures up, and I will pair that with like a nice big roan, like côte rôti, or, but I don't know what I'm talking about this for, but I just enjoy going on a journey, opening up a bottle of wine, sharing it with friends, and going to a place in the world or a place in time. My father was here visiting, and it was his birthday, and I found a 1939 Chateau Chasplein Bordeaux. So Second World War. I said, "Dad, this may be awful. It may be gone, but it might still be alive. We don't know." So it took me 20 minutes to get the cork out of the bottle very slowly. And I said, "Maria, you got to make lamb with Bordeaux." You gotta have lamb, your little lamb chops, and we eat most a lot of vegetables and but once in a while we have meat, and we're opening this bottle of wine, and it's 1939, and I thought this is our only time capsule, and I tasted it and smelt it, and it's almost like it kind of brought a bit of a tear, like, yep, still alive, you know, it's like us, and it's. It takes you back. You think 1939. Wow, we're drinking this wine. It was harvested the year, you know, the Germans invaded
Poland. Yeah,
things are going on. You think, can you imagine? Like they're trying to harvest these grapes, and there's bombs falling into the, and you know, wines have opened like it's my year, 64. You know, Napa Zinfandel from a Louis Martini, one of the older families out there, one of the oldest families out there. You're drinking the wine, and it's still there. It's still fresh. It's still great. And you're thinking, wow, 1964, we put on music from the Beatles when I was born. And the stuff that was going on, you think back then what was happening. And, you know, I was just born and this wine was harvested. So that's why I love it, because it can take you away and take you back to a place or a time.
I like that.
And then when you pair it with something that, you know, my wife cooks, or you have this, it's a hobby. It's my little hobby.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. That's cool.
And it makes me happy. It's just a... It's a moment in time. It's family. Food and wine revolve around basically family and happy times and good times and struggle. And of course, you know, they say in tough times, people, you know, can turn to alcohol, and in good times, people can turn to alcohol.
Like what we talked about at the very beginning when we were referencing the pandemic, silver linings. Mm-hmm. It's something that makes you happy. And that idea. Like, it's not nearly as romantic or as, like, I would say charismatic as wine is, but I'll even look at like coins and look at the year a coin was minted and be like, I have a bunch of like wheat pennies, the stuff that was minted like in the 20s and stuff like that. And I'm like, this was, you know, right before, you know, the stock market crashed, or this was right after the stock market crashed, or
after the Spanish flu, after the other pandemic, you know?
The other pandemic. Yeah. So... this thing has survived two pandemics now.
Yes, I know.
It's just wild. To wrap all of this up, I have two. I could continue talking to you for a long time, but so if you'd be willing, I'd love to have you back on the show to talk about whatever.
Of course, man.
My final two questions. One, I've referenced the Alan Alda podcast before, and I've been really liking that he ends each show with seven quick questions. I'm not going to answer seven questions. I promise. I'm picking one, and I asked this one before, but all the others seem like it just doesn't quite fit with the format of the podcast. So I'm going to ask you this. What do you wish you really understood? And you can answer quickly. If you want to go in detail, you're more than welcome to. You can just be like, I wish I understood blank. And we can leave it at that too. I like that question because it's very, you know, what do you wish you understood?
What do you wish people understood? I wish we understood our differences, you know,
and
the differences, you know, what makes us stronger. We tend to be fearful. I think there's only two true emotions in acting, and that's fear and love, and everything else is a derivative of those two true emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are fearful, we have examples of that around us on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's how you know, it turns to anger. It turns to...
it's horrible, you know, especially in our own country. We have a lot of that, and it's very tribal, and it's very sad. It's a shame. In a place like Los Angeles, I'll sort of end it on this. There's a... the food scene here is amazing. It encompasses every culture, every... For example, just in Mexico alone, every different province is represented. You can get authentic everything here.
Yeah.
You can go to Ethiopia here. You can go, you know, around the world here. It's all like 1,000 different neighborhoods. And what makes LA great is its strength. And we shouldn't fear that. And it's a real shame that some people do. I think it's very sad.
That's a good answer.
You know, we don't seem to learn very much from history at all. So
I'll have to have you back on and we can go into all, this may be a video game podcast, but we don't focus necessarily just straight on video games. I like these types of conversations because you are in part of a ton of video games, which is why I wanted to have you on. And I like your work, obviously, in animation and voiceover and all that stuff, but more fun to me than just asking specifics.
Yeah, next time we'll have to talk about how many times I had to do the laugh for Jetta in Marvel Capcom.
There we go.
Woo!
We'll definitely do that. All right, my final question. Questions from Courtney. My wife famously knows nothing about geek culture, video games, anime, cartoons, and whatnot. So I always ask her for a question because she doesn't know anything that my guest does. And I always find that interesting. So questions from Courtney. Questions from Courtney. I don't have a theme song for it yet. I just kind of pick a different jingle each time and we go from there. You were talking before about you love traveling back in time. So what she sent me a list and the one I'm picking. If you could time travel and stay for 1 week, which week/time period would you go to?
Oh boy, that is
shouldn't have ended this episode on that question. That's a thinker.
That is a tough question. There is no sanctuary. in the time machine. Wow. That's tough.
If you'd like, you could hold off on answering till the next time you come back and you can take some time and think on it.
No, I have dabbled in the English the series, for crying out loud, I have a mental block.
English series. I'm trying to think of Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
All right, I got that. Shot in the dark.
I quite enjoy the era that takes place in around the turn of the century and around, you know, before the First World War. It was quite interesting to be before flight.
Mm-hmm.
They call it a telephone. Can you believe it? something about that era and about the clothes and about the hats and, but also in the summertime, it'd be just horrible. But I think around the, you know, the turn, I think it was quite interesting back in the day of Downton Abbey
times. All right. Well, we will end the episode here. My last, it's not even really much of a question, just more, where can everybody find you online and what would you like to promote? You already referenced two of your more recent credits, Farzar and Green Eggs and Ham. Is there anything else you'd like to promote and where can everybody find you online?
Well, on the I'm on Instagram. I have a bigger presence on the other one, the Twitter, and it's at DKVO, DKAYEVO. Tara Strong hates that. Always hated my fan, but social media. I'm getting so on Twitter. There's a lot of stuff that usually happens on there, and I post some stuff on. Online, I do have Hollywood and Wine on Twitter, or on Instagram. If you're interested for whatever reason, that's just my hobby. And of course, davidk.com on the website has all the stuff. It's all up to date. Some cool trailers and campaigns and scenes. It's there's a whole deep website there to play around on, and the store is there too. You can always buy one of my yes buttons through there. I'm kind of running out, but you know, so davidk.com is probably the best way to see, and then Twitter at DKVO. And also, what else? The Farzar is dropped. There's a few things, of course, I can't talk about. You get Psychonauts 2 is out there right now, and it's fun. That's for,
a honey pepper ball bacon that play Ford Kruller. Rasputin, he's just a fun character to play.
That's out there, of course. Ratchet and Clank Resistance. People are still, getting into that and playing, and it's incredibly fun. But yeah, I'm sure I'm missing something. The final season of, or the current final season, I who knows, of Masters of the Universe, MOTU. A Cringer is on right now, and I'm probably missing a bunch of stuff. But yeah, it's out there. It's all out there. I'm sure you'll find it online. if I can't remember.
All right. And as usual for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And I like feeling warm and fuzzy. If you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod for just $1 a month. You'll get all the episodes a few days early at a higher bit rate, as well as access to a patron exclusive Discord. If you want to support me at the $5 level, you will get all of that plus 2 extra bonus episodes, which now that I think about it, I might have to record one tonight still, so I better get on that. But that's at the $5 a month level, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. But the most important shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading. David, thank you once again so much. I loved getting to speak with you. I hope to have you back on in the future, and just thank you.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun. Cheers.
That will do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening, and I will see you all next time. Thank you.